And welcome to The Third Opinion.
La, la, la.
Hi, Eva.
Hey, Sian.
And Michael.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I miss the Italian cowboy music, but that's okay.
Oh, we tried something a bit different today. We need a filler because you guys were running late, but that's okay.
And hello and welcome to The Third Opinion Uncensored. This is a radio show and podcast about public health, media, science, health and well-being, and also censorship in the time of COVID and beyond. We look beyond the media headlines to create a space for critical thinking, intelligent debate, and the freedom to dialogue. This week, we will be interviewing Tommy Huppert, the founder and CEO of Canatrek. This is one of the first enterprises in Australia to secure all federal and state government licenses to import cannabis seed, research, grow, process, manufacture, and distribute the much aligned medical cannabis products. Tommy is a graduate of Monash University, a health economist, entrepreneur, and innovator from the Melbourne Jewish community where we are broadcasting this show. Welcome, Tommy.
It's awesome to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It is our pleasure. Let's start at the very beginning. Tell us a little bit about what brought you to this place you are now.
Well, the beginning starts with the seed. And there was a legislation which began through a conversation through Professor David Pennington around 2012-13 called the Conversation about Relooking at the Medicinal Cannabis Laws in the country. And that conversation led to legislation in 2016. It was the fastest legislation bipartisan to pass through Parliament. It was less than 30 days in October 2016. And then the legislation of the Narcotic Drug Amendment Act was passed. And that heralded the beginning of this industry, which I was in the right place at the right time to apply for a license. And we received one of the first licenses and haven't stopped running since.
Why was it fast-tracked so quickly?
I think it was a groundswelling of conversation. So from 2012 to 16, there's a lot of years, a lot of conversations, and it got to the point where everyone realised that we need to pass this law, and they had a crack at it, and it came out okay, very complex, and they had another run of it a few years ago where they changed some of the legislation to iron out the kinks of supply, which were pretty tangled up.
What is your vision, and where are we now in terms of the distribution of cannabis in Australia?
Well, I think we have to look at cannabis, medicinal cannabis, herbal, adult, recreation, whatever you want to call it. This has been one of the most popular commodities since day dot. And in fact, Australia was founded on cannabis. I don't think we were taught that in school.
No. What do you mean founded on cannabis?
More information, please.
Yes.
Might have to drill down and do a bit of history learning, but Australia was a very large country, lots of land, and they're looking for a place to grow cannabis at the time. There was a huge trade of cannabis through India, through Europe, and this was a new area that of potential of commercialization.
What year are we talking?
Oh, we're talking back in the 18th century. So just to show, this has been around forever. The fundamentals have not changed. So law was enacted where we are today. Today, all over the world, cannabis is probably the most popular drug, probably alongside coffee. Unfortunately, because it's illicit, there's no data, and you don't really know what's going on. So suddenly, there's a wave of legislation which is travelling across every country in the world. And it's taking a lot of time. We have probably three or four countries that have embedded legislation, Israel, Canada, America, Australia, which actually have a now vibrant medicinal cannabis supply chain or economy. So
how did you get involved? Like, what was your driver to make this happen?
I think it was looking at a new innovative medicine, which I didn't really understand, and I wanted to have a deep dive. I was lucky I had time to research it. I was fascinated by hearing a story by a gentleman called Zach Klein. He was the first Israeli person to receive a script for PTSD. He was a bomb sapper. So his job was to go and unzap bombs. And unfortunately, there was an incident. He survived but had an injury, and the medicinal cannabis helped him. So he was patient 001 in Israel, which is probably the largest, fastest growing, you know, medicinal cannabis program in the world. And that fascinated me at the time. I was looking into PTSD, and I was intrigued when I heard that cannabis actually could help, and that's how it started.
Is that a program that goes on in Israel still now?
In fact, I heard only a few days ago that they've actually added medicinal cannabis for a really interesting vaporizer, specifically for soldiers, because unfortunately, as we know in Israel, there's a lot of traumatic events all the time, and they're just trying to manage medicines. So we're seeing a lot of innovation in Israel, that it actually is not only through a patient, through a product and a delivery system, where medicinal cannabis can support people with these serious disease states.
What diseases are, or diseases, lifestyle challenges, what is the range of things that cannabis is being used for, and is there research behind all these areas yet?
So the main areas where a doctor today prescribes medicinal cannabis is pain, sleep support, anxiety. They're the main three areas. Michael, as a pharmacist, might be able to support.
No, well, I see those three are the main, every day of every week, that's the three big ones that come in. And chronic pain is the one in particular that gives me smiles when people, I can't tell you, it happens at least a couple of times a day that somebody will look me straight in the eye and say, it's changed my life. Because the side effects of being using opioid painkillers for anything more than a week or two can also be life-changing in the wrong direction. And to get that balance back in again, it literally changes people's lives.
Sure. So when you think about why people visit a GP, I think I've covered more than 50% of all the medical indications seeking help. And here we have a product, unapproved, untested, which people are going back and using daily.
And I imagine the cost of pharmaceuticals being used in these three categories must add up to many billions of dollars of costs. I mean, you know, there's a whole big pharma challenge that you must be facing in presenting this as an option.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating area of medicine, and for doctors and pharmaceutical companies to look at it. I believe they're looking at it far more seriously now, because we have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years of data coming through, which is data is everything. And I think the opportunity for the integration more of non-approved, it means you can't claim that it will achieve a certain solution to a medical indication, because you need to go through proper clinical trials, and that takes time and a lot of funding. So we don't have time for that. So this is the real uniqueness about this industry, where patients will say, I'll try it. They're happy to, and it works, and that's enough for them.
So proper clinical trials, can we talk about that? Because it's, I mean, exactly what you're saying. You know, you have a patient, they try something, it works for them. And with pain, it's really very much about the individual user, because it changes their life literally overnight. And I've also seen this with my patients and clients over the years. How do you balance that when, I guess, what they're asking for is randomized controlled trials, which cost a lot of money, and often only the big pharmaceutical companies can afford to fund.
Our approach has been, and the approach of the industry is very collaborative, where companies may support an anecdotal trial, like a preclinical trial, to gather some evidence. Currently, we're involved in a potential trial, which is a tough one. It's palliative care at the Royal Children's Hospital. So we're providing the medicine. So trial has been approved and it will go through its phases. So many companies are supporting the provision of the medicine, and the research institutions are creating the protocol, or we're working together. So there's a real collaboration at small scale. We haven't seen in Australia yet big research projects. We've looked into CBD, but the costs are quite enormous. We're talking, you know, over $10 million.
Wow.
These are serious costs. So
yeah.
Unfortunately, the system and the appetite to spend this would be industry-wide. So you have to ask the question, why would we do it? So my view is, well, I believe the government should fund the research for everyone, and then the manufacturers can make the medicine and deliver to the patients. So you, because the research,
like a public health investment,
would be fantastic, and then it would get the depth of the community to have access to the medicines quicker.
I see that you're also working with medical cannabis for pets. Tell me about the research for pets, because the interesting thing with pets is there's probably not the same level of hoops you have to jump through to get approval for animals, is it? Does it cost the same to do a trial for an animal? And the feedback is based on what?
I might answer the question with a question. Where... why is it necessary that we're doing clinical trials at all? If the medicine works, then
what's the assessment? I'm interested in, because I remember this years ago with horses, and they were using acupuncture on horses, and it worked. Their trainers knew it worked. Yeah. The horse would perform better after. You know, it wasn't the placebo effect. So that's how it was easier to fast track certain treatments for animals, I believe.
So maybe I'll come explain what we're doing with PetCan. So petcan.com.au, if everyone's have a look.
Double N.
So we created a platform, and this platform really is a way for pet parents or owners to have a conversation. And they would have a conversation with a vet. And our team of vets would talk to the vets about CBD. So the laws with medicinal cannabis today in Australia is that CBD is only allowed. CBD is non-psychoactive. It's a Schedule 4 medicine. So it's
got no THC in it.
No, it's not dangerous at all. It's actually, in my view, a fantastic food. Mm-hmm. It's
food grade.
Yeah. And all over the world, it's treated as food. So we're dealing with a pretty, I would say,
innocuous,
but not a serious API or medicine that we should be concerned with CBD.
Well, I think it's just that because you don't have the psychoactive effect, then that puts it in a completely different category than THC products that everyone, you know, has a stigma about.
Can you explain psychoactive, meaning that it changes how you see things?
Puppy won't get high from getting CBD oil.
Yeah. Puppy won't get...
Able to walk a straight line, no problem.
Be able to drive.
Can it cure anxious dogs?
I know you're joking about driving here, but this is one of the really critical points that are coming up with cannabis medication, in that you'll get a legally prescribed item, take it as prescribed the night before, have a good night's sleep, and the next day if you happen to get pulled over by the police for a drug test, you could lose your license because you're driving under the influence of a drug, even though there is zero change. There's no impairment to your driving ability.
So you're saying that X hours later there's no impairment, or there's no impairment straight after you ingest? Like, what's the time frame for behavioural change?
Oh, there's an individual sort of response, but unless you've had a very heavy night before, when you wake up the next day and had breakfast and a shower and got changed and you're off to work, you have zero impairment from what you've been doing. But if you get pulled over, you're gone.
Because it's still in your blood.
Correct. You know, you're probably talking at least 24 to 48 hours it could be detectable. And then because it's fat soluble, it hangs around a lot longer than that if you're particularly unlucky or you're a slow metabolizer or something like that.
Your weight, so, or depending on what you ate, or...
A lot of things, yeah. So legislation's been discussed in Parliament. There's an obvious anomaly that you're doing a legally recommended by your medical practitioner action and you're getting busted for nothing. There's no 0.05 as for alcohol for cannabis.
On or off?
On or off. So it's like 0.00001 is on.
Sometimes it can stay for longer than one day. So,
but hang on. If someone's taking, say, Valium or taking, you know, a medically prescribed drug like that, which remains in the system for a long time and is having consequences in terms of reaction times, is that being measured?
It's been accepted.
It's been accepted.
As okay.
Yeah.
So...
And that sort of impairment could be coming from prescription opioid painkillers, could be coming from prescription benzodiazepines, could be coming from prescription antidepressants, and that's never been measured. And just once again, cannabis is getting put in the spotlight.
I just want to come back to the pet question because I know we went off. So the interesting things with CBD, so dogs can get anxious with lightning or people pressing the doorbell or
PTSD. I mean, I've had dogs always from pounds and they always seem to have some trauma.
So this is where CBD formulations we're preparing, and it's been really interesting because pets also need care, medical care, like humans. So we have two vets who talk to vets and trying to help pet parents with their challenges.
I hear some pets are using prescription antidepressant medication.
As opioid antidepressant.
Oh, for painkillers, I guess they would too. But it's the, how do you know if your dog's depressed? I mean, my dog's got droopy eyes. And I look and I think, oh, you're looking sad. But I mean, yeah, it's strange. Can't quite wrap my head around that one.
They don't wag their tail when you come home.
Oh, yeah, could be.
So coming back maybe to research, whether it's humans and animals and horses. So I think we've got a really exciting research future. We just need to understand the regulatory framework and make sure that if we were to drill down and try and find claims for medicinal cannabis cannabinoids. So there's many. It's not just CBD or THC or CBG. It's actually the king of the herbs. There's nearly 100 cannabinoids or maybe more, which is so unique. Most plants have one or two. So we're really dealing with quite a exciting plant, which is completely out of the box than any other plant on the earth.
Wow. Yeah, what I'm finding with the prescriptions that are coming through is a lot of people think just about the levels of THC that are on the label, the number that's there, but it's really making a difference with the terpenes that are in there associated with it will make the bioavailability much higher. And you know, sometimes you might get a prescription for a herb and you'll get a CBD oil with that, which sometimes due to the cost people don't want to get. And it's actually detracting from the THC effect that they're going to be using. So the two working together, it's an incredible plant. And I think the endocannabinoid system research has also been ignored because it's an illegal product. And since I've started finding out a bit more, it's really a homeostatic system that there's a lot to understand in relation to inflammation in particular, which is why we get such great results. And I think there's a lot to do with the immune system as well.
Very much. It's fascinating. So what we're doing now is, say there's 100 cannabinoids. We're going to have, hopefully not 100 years, but over the next decades, we'll be isolating different cannabinoids, which will help different disease states and combinations of. So that's the research which will just happen organically over time.
Is it similar to mushrooms in terms of the diversity of health therapeutic benefits?
I think so, because you're dealing with a plant with multiple compounds mm-hmm. in it, and that's unique. So mm-hmm. in the pharmaceutical world, we usually isolate an API, mm-hmm. an active pharmaceutical ingredient. Mm-hmm. You know, you have one API. I haven't seen a drug with two APIs, maybe two.
Mm.
You know, it is quite fascinating how this industry is creating drugs through one plant.
Mm.
And sometimes it's just discovered overnight a new cannabinoid and it does A or B. So
we're dealing with something which sounds like it sounds very relatively safe to the pharmaceutical options that are out there at the moment.
Yeah, I think if you talk about, there's a lot of discussion whether medicinal cannabis is addictive, and there's some proponents say it is. But I've seen scientific evidence that it is not at all addictive. If you don't have cannabis, you don't have the reactions like you won't have nicotine or another drug.
Mm.
If you come off it really quick, you might miss it. It's not an addictive medicine.
Well, you kind of wonder about addiction, because if you're taking a prescription medication every day and you're going to have an adverse reaction if you stop taking it quickly, are you getting a prescribed addiction? It really, and also the other drugs that you mentioned at the very, very beginning, along with coffee, I wanted to put sugar into a medication of addiction.
Chocolate. Well, it has got a lot of sugar in it.
It does. But I think sugar is another drug that's legally available that causes addictions, up and down, cravings, all of the above. Yeah. And as a result, you've got to have the obesity and diabetes situations mm-hmm. considered.
And all the inflammation and other associated diseases.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now we see warnings on products. Interesting from Israel, mega sugar levels in red. I haven't seen that here, but there's products which are coming through to our supermarkets locally.
Mm.
Well, there's been some
big red on regulatory stamp, supersized sugar, beware.
On lollipops.
Yeah.
On kosher lollipops.
Absolutely.
There's been some discussion about a tax on sugar products, which sort of hasn't gone anywhere, with legs in Parliament.
Mm.
But I'm wondering, is there any specific tax on cannabis anywhere along the industry route?
Absolutely. Number one tax is that as a cannabis company, medicinal cannabis company, we pay a lot of tax in terms of PYOG and HR tax, and there's GST. So there are taxes embedded. In the illicit market, there's no taxes. So they have a different supply chain playing field. In Canada, the government taxed on top of all the other taxes, and unfortunately the industry there has imploded because of that.
They added a special cannabis tax
on top of the normal taxes of doing business, and it created a situation where the illicit market is just has such a great advantage that the taxed market just cannot move and grow, and it is what it is. So that's something that we call the invisible hand in economics, which we have to make mm-hmm. sure it doesn't become an invisible grab. And then no research will happen.
Wow.
And everything will back to the where it was. So this is something that we need to really keep an eye on.
So tell me about how you see that we can safely and effectively and cheaply, because at the moment the reality is you're paying a lot more for your medical cannabis prescription than you are for your very potentially unsafe sleeping tablets, pain management treatments.
Sure.
Or anxiety tablets with long-term potential side effects from addiction and difficulties with withdrawing.
Which you can get for about, is it $6.50 as a prescription?
if you go to Chemist Warehouse.
If you've got a concession card. But your average citizen, it's $30, I think it is. It's just dropped down to $30 and the government pays the rest.
Yeah, so we have a scenario where we have a product which patient has to pay its cost price without subsidization, which is really challenging for different people who need the medication every day. We have a compassionate access scheme, which we initiated from very early days, and we've subsidized a huge amount of products to people under the breadline or first responders, and we've actually formulated standard, quite large discounts up to 40-50% of the product value. So we have that.
This is with Canatrek, with your company. So this is this unique worldwide? Is this this sounds like a fabulous initiative.
Well, we had no choice because we had patients coming and they need the medication. Some are spending over $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year on this medication. And they can't work.
And they're willing to do that, even though they could get other drugs, or is it that no other drug can actually help them?
This is the drug that helps
them. This is it.
Yeah, so we're faced with a really challenging issue where we have a product, people need it, they can't afford it. So we have a system where we triage these individuals, we get
some
kind of...
Have you just started a foundation of some kind? You've put a name to it and a structure?
Yes, we've also just been recently approved for the Canatrek Foundation as a non-for-profit, and the idea is that we would be able to formalise what we did in Canatrek with the what we call the CAS scheme, the Compassionate Access Scheme program, that we can even do even more. So our philosophy is we will give a corner of the field. In fact, we have a product called Cornerfield, which is a value line of product, which is nothing... it has maybe hasn't had the right shape, but the API is absolutely fine. And that's another way that we can help patients get access. But the foundation is to actually do more, where Canatrek will give a corner of the field. You've heard of 1% for the planet. We want to give 1% for the patient, as much as we can do. And then the foundation hopefully will provide the service that we can actually give more, even up to free healthcare for patients who just don't have the means.
Wow.
So that's...
Are any politicians jumping on this? Because they must see there's an opportunity for the community to want to vote for them if they're supporting this. Because what there's just this giant gap between safe, effective, precautionary principle approach to managing health. And here you're presenting options which people can't afford.
Yeah, I think if we can roll it back a little bit. So today there is an existing illicit market and people are purchasing that product. We believe are self-medicating. So we believe that people are using medicinal cannabis for hundreds and hundreds of years. That's how they manage their indications and effectively. So they can't afford it. I think what we're seeing now is that we have a medicinal cannabis program and new entrants are coming in who have never used it. And it's actually happening with more, I think, the older generation who are needing the options for pain relief or lifestyle. And that's where I think the financial issues are coming, because it's something that they haven't used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something it's a challenge we have to resolve.
Yeah, I think the general public really has to wrap its head around the fact that as CBD... there is no sort of high or euphoria or any sort of mental effect, but a fantastic anti-inflammation effect that's been proven. You're allowed to say proven these days anymore?
Well, I don't think we can. So this is, we have proven under a pharmaceutical supply chain with phase 1, 2, 3, et cetera, drug-registered products.
Yeah.
That can go into a PBS scheme and be highly subsidised, and that takes years and years.
Well,
dollars.
My personal opinion from seeing lots of people face-to-face, week in, week out, is that they have come to me and say it's changed their lives. So For me, it's proven. That, you know,
yeah.
And 2,000 years and 10 billion people later, I'm willing to say it's a safe and effective medication.
And that reality is real-world evidence, and we get, we call them appreciation bombs, where almost every day, 2 days, a patient writes a nice note saying, guys, thank you. You've changed my life. This has done this. And that's what makes us all run to work and try and do more to help.
I have a friend who's had insomnia for decades, and it was only when she started using CBD oil that she suddenly, for the first time in her life, was able to sleep well and changed her life. And you hear this all the time.
Your mum? She was happy.
That's for pain, for pain management. And she's, yeah, but that's been really hard. Like, it was only now that she got it. When 3 years ago when she first tried it, there were so many obstacles to her actually getting the cannabis. And when she had to sign a form, and on this form it had a list of all the things that could go wrong. And she was like, this is a really dangerous drug, darling. I don't know if I should take this. And I took one of her other medications and I pulled up the side effects of that. And she could see so much worse. And, you know, personally, for my own patients and clients, seeing what happens when they're on heavy dosages of pain medication for chronic pain, and, you know, often obesity that can come along with it, and a whole bunch of unintended consequences. Yeah, it was just interesting to see the fear that was generated, and as well as the cost. Now, this time round, this year, we did it again, and it was so much better. She's actually using one of your products. And the process was so much easier as well. So how have you been able to make the process easier for all of us?
Yeah, that's a really topical question. Because, you know, here we are, 2023, have to check in. We're in the seventh year, so we're in our seventh year of a license entity. We received our license 1st of May 2017, so that's a long time. And we're seeing only in the last, I would say, 12 to 18 months a maturity of the market. The first 4 years were really, really complicated. It was a struggle getting one script. I remember the first trick took about 3 or 4 months, and it was obviously a lot of effort between the doctor, the pharmacy, and the TGA. So we have an industry now. It's to give an indication, it's worth around $400 maybe $500 million, so it is significant. We believe the illicit market is worth around $10 billion.
Wow.
And the illicit market, unfortunately, has no checks and balances of quality. A lot of medicine, a lot of cannabis grown illicitly may have chemicals, it may have growth hormones, who knows what is in it. And that is the biggest problem. So our mission is to transition from that market to legitimate, proper, clean products where patients have authenticity of the product and with the supply. That's really important for the industry in general. And
because if you are self-medicating, you want to know what you're medicating. So if you find that, you know, you smoke a spliff before you go to sleep and it helps you sleep, that's fine.
What's a spliff?
If you intake cannabis with tobacco in a cigarette type.
And you've bought this on the illicit market
from your neighbour.
And how much would your neighbour be selling it for, just in terms of cost?
Roughly, you'll pay about $300 an ounce
versus
from your neighbour. So you're talking just over $10 a gram. And in the pharmacy, you'll be paying now it's between $100 and $200. It was between sort of $150 and $200. But there are products like Cornerfield.
Cornerfield is $99.
There you go.
So we actually a completely matching with an authentic product, the illicit market. So that, when you ask me the question, what are we doing now?
Yeah.
Price, we are matching. I reckon it will match very soon, if not today.
So this is like Coles brand, yeah? Like you just get it cheap, the Coles brand, it's
house
cheaper, the house brand.
Yeah.
You're talking about the illicit.
It's a while before.
No. You're I'm asking about the Cornerfield. Is that a cheaper version of...
it's just, we call it a value brand because we realize that patients can't afford. So
yeah.
So
it's like the funny shaped lemons.
Yeah, yeah.
People won't buy them because they're not oval.
The odd batch.
Yes. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. It just looks the same. But you have to understand that when cannabis is used, it has to be all crushed.
Right.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're crushing either an orchid lemon or a round lemon or oval lemon.
So it looks different. It looks a little bit twisted.
Yeah, when you squeeze lemon juice, it's the same.
Yes. Okay. So cool. So you're saying it's becoming equitable.
Price-wise?
Yeah.
It is now.
Wow. Yeah,
like this is very recent. But I just wanted to get back to one point about the use of cannabis in deprescribing from prescription medication, because what you were saying before is about the prescription stuff. It just does one thing, and because of the many components to the cannabis plant, that you're getting all this combination, so it has a good bioavailability, it has the effect, and now that it's regulated, you can start to titrate your dosage as you would a regular medication.
Mm-hmm.
So you might think of it as a transition from prescription medication to cannabis that you can control and measure and then gradually reduce your use as your lifestyle indicates. And if getting back to zero is your goal, then you can do that in a measurable way.
I see that you're doing work with also smoking cessation programs using cannabis as a transition to stop smoking. Tell us a little bit about that, because obviously that's the value of it, that you're able to take drugs that have got other untoward side effects, which most do, and give them an option. Who's involved in helping people transition or deprescribe, as you've used the term? How does that happen? Because I haven't seen many doctors who even know how to prescribe cannabis, let alone help people come off some of their other medication in that way.
Specifically with nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an opportunity, I believe, where inhalation via vaporization, so a vape, essentially like an electronic cigarette. However, the product inside is a therapeutic product, being CBD. And we believe that that could be a wonderful opportunity for helping people with nicotine cessation, using a therapeutic product rather than a harsh product, and slowly draw them away from that addiction of obviously e-cigarettes are used in that way with less and less nicotine. We're saying just take away the nicotine completely and use a CBD as that alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So that still needs a bit of working through in terms of, you know, how doctors think about it, prescribing, and pharmacists, et cetera.
Yeah, and for those of you who started getting scared when you heard the word vape, from what you've heard in the papers, most of the damage is done by the contents of the cartridge that you are vaping. A vape itself is not dangerous.
Yeah, like glycerol, the thing that creates all that huge, humongous smoke that you see blowing out. That's no good.
No, it's not good for you. So those watermelon things with lots of oils and other unknowns is not what we're talking about here. A vape is just something that's going to heat up and release the product that's in there.
It's a delivery
system. A good product in there.
My mother tried it and it was unsuccessful. But maybe 87's too late to start. But what other things can it be used for in terms of deprescribing, Michael?
Look, at this stage, you just want to stick to the ones that we've mentioned so far, and that's a huge part of the market. In particular, opioid painkillers, benzodiazepines, so that's any of those medicines that end in azepam. And
for sleep support, people use medicines. And they
use that for anxiety as well. So they're the big three that I don't think there's much argument against using cannabis for those.
How difficult is it for a doctor to become a prescriber? Because it's not like all the other pharmaceuticals where someone comes around, says, here's the drug, you've got the drug rep teaching them a little bit about it, and then they can prescribe it. That's not what's happening, is it?
So the way we approach it is, obviously, we were at ground zero many years ago, and we have to teach doctors. The endocannabinoid system was never taught in medical school, so we have to add that module in now.
So we didn't have one in the past, and it's new.
Well, it was an illegal substance when the doctors went through.
Yeah. But it maybe have been a 15-minute or half an hour, the endocannabinoid system, which is the largest system in the body. So there's something to take note of in medical school.
Literally from head to toe.
Yeah, how they write their...
Yeah, medical text.
You're talking brains, you're talking lungs, you're talking heart, you're talking liver, you're talking kidneys.
All interconnected.
Yep.
So the education starts where we have a field of what we term medical science liaison team members, and Cannatrek visits clinics and doctors, and they're very busy. It's a national team. And in that process, we provide them with information about the products and also invite them to do a day course that they can do virtually and can become an approved prescriber.
Just one day?
Yeah, it's a course. It's online, and it upskills the doctor to understand more about the endocannabinoid system, the products, and how it's been used over the last few years successfully. And that's how we are helping doctors get more informed.
What's the uptake like? How many doctors have been through your process?
So we've trained a very large proportion of prescribers. I believe there's close to 2,000, maybe more in the country, and we've trained up over 800 over the last few years. So we have a very strong presence in training doctors and supporting their understanding of the medication. And that's been a really successful way of getting the word out to the prescribers, which are critical in access.
Where would, if anyone listening was interested in finding a prescriber, where would they find that list of doctors?
Well, Cannatrek have been preparing for this radio show for many years, and also understanding that at some point that there'll be a lot of people looking for doctors who are untrained. So we have a platform which we are we have launched called My Eden,
myeden.com,
and it's a platform
.com, not AU,
and that helps patients who have a script manage their scripts. And also allows patients to access our compassionate access scheme. And soon we'll be able to offer patients an opportunity to talk with a doctor and arrange an appointment. So at the moment, we've been referring a lot of patients to different clinics, and we continue to do that.
My Eden, putting plant-powered healthcare at your fingertips. Change the way you think about health. Fill out the form below, and we'll get you give you a heads up when new features go live. All right. Yeah. So if you go to myeden.com, and I'm new, got a script, I'm already registered. So there's a way to managing your scripts. Is it just got easier? That looks absolutely fantastic, and it looks like you've thought of almost everything in this.
Yeah,
and
the idea is gives the patients can find a doctor, they can get the medicines delivered to the door. We make sure that this is the lowest cost price available. So there's a lot of advantages. Okay. This is a patient focused app that they can actually manage their health in terms of finding a doctor or having access to the medication.
And in terms of the costs coming down, the government actually supporting this incredible health initiative, public health initiative. Is there anything happening on that side?
There's a lot of conversations happening at the policy level in Canberra with politicians. I think...
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go right? I think the way Cannatrek is approaching it is we're trying to get the government to provide more support, whether it's research or subsidisation. But in reality, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you've got the legalised cannabis, and you've got the Liberal Democrats about to be the Libertarian Party who are supporting the idea in Parliament. So it just depends on how much voice they get and who's listening and who cares.
Yeah, so I think it's what we're trying to do is do the right thing in our community as a company. If we provide subsidies, great, we're actually doing what the government should be doing. Research, we're doing as much research as we can, what the government should be doing. So as long as we keep, we're initiating activities as much as possible that that we are patient-centric organisation, hence we created a seed-to-patient model, which we believe that's the best efficient way to deliver and have accessible medicine at the best value.
Tommy, it's incredible to see what you've done, what your company's done, what the people around you are obviously doing. And, if we can have you back here in the not-too-distant future when things start to move forward again and to hear how it's going, and maybe we could do a show with some doctors who are using your products or using the system, and they can talk about their experiences as well. Thank you very much for coming in, taking time out of your very busy day down the road, not too far, fortunately. This is...
I've got one more thing to say before we go. You are listening to JAIR88 FM, Australia's only Jewish community radio station, and on the web, j-air.com.au.
Thank you.
JAIR needs your membership. Membership costs us on air for only $54 a year.
Only $54.
Your membership enables us to pay our bills and provide quality radio like the show you're currently listening to. Join up via our website, j-air.com.au. Bye.
This is the Third Opinion Uncensored, and you've been listening to Tommy Huppert, who is the founder and CEO of Canatrek Australia. And you'll be able to listen to this again on podcast if you just go to the j-air.com.au website and look for the Third Opinion Thursdays, 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Sian.
Woohoo!
Thank you, Tommy. Radio's on and I'm moving round the place. I check my look in the mirror. Wanna change my clothes, my hair, my face, and I ain't getting nowhere. I'm just living in a dump like this. There's something happening somewhere. Baby, I just know.
J-Air, 88 FM.
Hi, this is Mark Kopolov with a reminder that you can support J-Air by joining as a member at j-air.com.au. Your membership fee of $54 a year will help J-Air maintain its commitment of bringing your community to you.
Hello, this is Graham Kemlow with a quick reminder to tune in to the Travel Writers Show every Wednesday from 5pm. We'll not only inform you, but inspire you with stories of food, wine, lifestyle and travel. That's 5 o'clock Wednesday on Melbourne's 88 FM or stream us at j-air.com.au.